Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Today we're going to talk with Marco Mangelsdorf of the Hawaii Island Energy Co-op, an entity that has been formed to make a bid to purchase Hawaiian Electric Light Company. And now that the State Public Utilities Commission has said no to NextEra's purchasing Hawaiian Electric Company, the holding company for Helco on this island, I believe there's the thought that maybe the door might be open for a purchase by the Hawaii Island Energy Co-op. But I'd like to start with a look back at what we talked about with both Marco Mangelsdorf and with David Bissell of the existing Kauai Island Utility Cooperative a year ago. Last week, we broadcast about a half an hour of a talk with them from a year ago. We'll add on a couple more questions, and then we'll get to Marco Mangelsdorf. And by the way, Island Issues is here every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And we're sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Shops and on Ali'i Drive. You may also listen to the podcast of last week's interview, or any interviews really, at lava1053.com or at koacountry1077.com. Just click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Let's begin by listening to Marco's answer from a year ago about where the technical expertise would come from to run a Hawaii Island Energy Co-op.
Well, you have to have people running a utility company who know how to run the utility company. And the 350-some-odd Helco employees overall, I think, do a truly superlative job under sometimes incredibly difficult conditions. And any type of follow-up co-op here would need people who know how to run a utility company. So any notion of, oh, we're going to do wholesale house cleaning and out with the old and in with the new, no. We would need people who would know how to run a utility company.
One thing that large utilities really pride themselves on is disaster restoration. And you on Kauai, David, have faced some really bad hurricanes. We on Hawaii Island faced Hurricane Azelle coming ashore. Can an electric utility cooperative that operates solely on one island manage emergency restoration? And first, I'll ask you, David, what's your plan if you have a disaster on Kauai? How will you recover with just what you have on Kauai?
Well, you're not going to recover based on what you have on Kauai alone, just as if something happened on Oahu, a major hurricane hits, they're not going to be able to recover with their resources. Utilities help each other in times of disaster, and I'm certain that our sister utilities on other islands would come over here to help. We have mutual aid agreements with multiple West Coast utilities. Utilities will help, whether you're big or small. They're going to be there in time of need. It's another one of the benefits of being a cooperative, that we have access to FEMA money as well to help in the financial aspect of recovery. So it's a very big advantage when you're in hurricane-prone areas, as both these islands are.
I'll just reinforce and reiterate what David said. I remember back in Izelle, I saw KIUC trucks on this island. I saw Miko trucks on this island. I saw Hiko trucks on this island. And if it had happened to one of the other islands, there'd be Helco trucks or HIEC trucks on the island. That's who we are. That's the island ohana that we are collectively. So it's not going to make a difference whether it's an investor-owned utility, a co-op, a muni. I mean, that's who we are. That's what we do. We help. And David mentioned as well FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency Administration. Co-ops can tap into FEMA money. IOUs cannot. HECO cannot. Helco cannot. MECO cannot, because they are of a different category. But co-ops can. So there are both local resources, our friendly utilities on the other islands that we will always be able to count on, as well as federal money to be able to do whatever needs to be done to rebuild.
Question about the directors. You talked, Marco, about the democratic aspect of a utility co-op being a positive. One of the things that sometimes happens is when you have people voting, if they don't understand the technical and financial aspects, sometimes you can get a result that may not, in fact, be in the best interests overall of the utility. How do you keep special interest groups, factions, from taking over an energy co-op?
It's important to note that a co-op does not mean that for every decision that has to be made that it's going to be a plebiscite, that people will vote on, should we get a new power plant? Should we buy a new fleet of trucks? No, that's not the way it works. The way it works is that you have a democratically elected board where not all the board members are elected at once. That's not a good idea. So you have, let's say, in KLUC's case, three coming up for re-election or new elections at various times. So there's the natural kind of weeding out process of people who have rather, let's say, extreme ideas. For the most part, the people who get elected as board members for co-ops, they're people from the community who are willing to put themselves out there for little if no pay and do something that they believe in.
In our ongoing discussion of energy here on Island Issues, I wanted to get those few questions out. And now we're going to go live with Marco Mangelsdorf of the Hawaii Island Energy Cooperative here in the studio to give us an update. Just a reminder, Island Issues is here every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have Jay Ignacio, the president of HELCO, to address some of these very same issues. You may listen to past Island Issues, including last week's full conversation with David Bissell of Kauai Island Utility Co-op and Marco Mangelsdorf at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. And now to Marco Mangelsdorf. Good morning. Aloha, Marco.
Well, in the words of my friend Tom Gorak, PUC Commissioner, quoting the late, great John Lennon, what a long, strange trip it has been, Sherry, and it is truly a pleasure to be with you this morning. So thank you so much for having me back.
Good. Well, I'm glad to have you back. Now, as you know, last week we aired part one of our discussion from a year ago with yourself and David Bissell. And just now we've listened to a couple of the additional questions that the three of us talked about last year. So I'd like to get an update. And the first thing is, what do you see happening now relative to the provisioning of electric power in the state and on this island, now that the Public Utilities Commission has said no to NextEra's purchasing Hawaiian Electric? What happens next?
Well, that's the $64,000, and I think we're probably up to $64 million or $640 million question with inflation. There isn't a definitive answer to that right now. There are a number of players on multiple levels from on the business end, legislature, who are looking at what those options are and coming up with some type of game plan or some type of scorecard to see what are the options, how do they look comparatively speaking, and what direction should we take. So I don't have a definitive answer for you because we're still kind of collectively 2.5 months post-decision from the commission on July 15th. We're still chewing things over, many of us, and essentially trying to plot the next move forward.
Well, you know, Marco, one of the things that's always hanging in the air is the fact that the governor has ordered the utilities to be 100% renewable by 2045. So that's always out there, and that was part of this discussion. But in all of our discussions, and as I've heard you in forums, there's been universal praise for HELCO's work. So I guess my first question relative to the potential that the Hawaii Island Energy Co-op might purchase HELCO is, if it's not broke, why fix it?
No, that's a great question, Sherry. And I'm always have been, and I always will continue to be, in the place that, as far as I'm concerned, Hawaii Electric Light Company has done a very solid job in terms of developing renewable energy over the years. They're the best in the state in terms of total amount of power that's been provided to its customers, the percentage coming from renewables. So I'm never going to be a utility basher. But that said, I do believe that the case can be made, and it's the case that we've been making for over a year and a half now, that the co-op model on this particular island, I believe, does provide a number of benefits that are not available through the current ownership model, which is investor-owned utility model. And kind of in a nutshell, I break it down to four quick points here. Number one, there's local democratic control over one of the most important infrastructures on the island, which means that there's none of the inherent tension between the ratepayers, the people who pay electric bills, and shareholders that you find in investor-owned utilities. So that tension, that intrinsic tension, is not there because it is locally owned, locally controlled.
And it's basically the same people. The owners are the people who are using the services.
That is correct. The second point is that a co-op is necessarily going to have community-based and community-chosen strategic priorities determined by the membership, not by people on another island or let alone on another state. So again, that differentiates it between this model, the co-op model, and investor-owned utility that has other loyalties as well. Third point is that there is the potential, and I'll stress that word potential, for lower electric cost over time due to the lower cost of capital from tax-exempt status and access to essentially the cheapest money that can be found, including from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Utility Service, or RUS for short. And then finally, something that I don't think gets enough discussion but is very near and dear to my heart, the fourth point being is that under a co-op, there would also be a focus and an effort on transportation energy independence. And this is something that would differentiate, I would hope, this co-op from standard utility companies was interested in power generation, transmission, distribution, because transportation, if you don't crack the transportation nut, as far as the importation of fossil fuels into this island, into the state, you've only gone part way down the road. So it's really, really important that there be a much more energetic focus on transportation.
What do you mean by that exactly? Because I don't think our heads are around the concept of transportation right now. We're always just thinking about turning on the light switch in our home or office. So what do you mean by transportation independence?
Well, if you look at the total amount of fossil fuel products that come into the state of Hawaii, which is substantial and has been substantial forever, seemingly, a good portion of that is for transportation, ground transportation.
Meaning putting gas in my car?
Putting gas in your car or diesel in your truck. Or if we were to, we continue to transition to, let's say, electric vehicle-based transportation system, then you would have power generation powered by renewables or provided by renewables that would be charging people's batteries in their cars. So for the state of Hawaii and for the governor and the legislature to focus on 100% renewable energy by 2045, that, without making it more explicit, unfortunately, that is essentially focusing on power generation, and that's important. That's great. But we have a heck of a lot farther way to go, a much longer path to walk if we are going to become less dependent on imported fuels for transportation. And that's something which is the kind of the bastard stepchild to some extent that a lot of people don't want to talk about it. Why? Because it's really, really, really hard. But that's something that I see a co-op, if we were to have the opportunity to take over the utility company here, that is a very important priority to me.
And I'm just going to interject something here that I looked up after Marco left the studio on Friday when we were talking, and I added this on Saturday because I was curious. How much of the oil that comes into the state is used for electricity production versus, let's say, ground transportation? State of Hawaii has charts on their website. It turns out that 28% of the imported fossil fuel goes towards energy production, 27% goes to ground transportation, cars and trucks, 27% goes to commercial aviation. So what Marco's talking about is transportation takes up double the amount of oil used for electricity production. Now let's get back to our discussion with Marco. So Marco, how exactly would an energy cooperative address the fuel in my vehicle issue?
Well, if I had that answer for you, if I had an easy answer in terms of how we can make a more dramatic and rapid shift away from fossil liquid fuels that are powering the cars, I would be happy to give that to you, but it's not an easy, quick fix. It's going to be a serious commitment and a long-term commitment to move in that direction in terms of more electric vehicles and also fuel cell vehicles. Look at the Toyota Mirai, which is now available on Oahu, at least, that runs off of hydrogen. So not if, but when there are one or more hydrogen fueling stations on this island, then you will begin to see more FCVs, fuel cell vehicles, which won't have the range anxiety worries that EVs do now. You'll be able to drive 300-plus miles, 300, 400 miles on a full tank of compressed hydrogen.
I heard you say in a recent forum, the West Hawaii Forums Group held one a few weeks ago, that you would estimate the value of HELCO today to be somewhere between $725 million and $1 billion. And you have stressed in the past that in order for Hawaii Island Energy Co-op to actually do business, there has to be a willing seller. Are you negotiating with Hawaiian Electric to purchase HELCO at this time?
Well, really, good and juicy question, Sherry, and our policy necessarily has to be that we're not going to comment on any possible discussions of that nature, at least at this time. But thank you for asking.
I had to ask. Marco, right now we on this island use around 50% renewable power to produce electricity that allows us to turn on the lights in our homes. How hard do you think it's going to be to get that next 50%? Because typically it's the low-hanging fruit that goes first. So comment on that, what it's going to take.
We're already farther than any other island in the island chain is. And we are also blessed very much in terms of renewable energy resources, more so than I think any other island in the chain in terms of the potential for more geothermal, the potential for more wind, the potential for more solar. It's going to be a mix, and geothermal certainly is a very hot topic, no pun intended. It's a very sensitive issue. It's not for me, it's not for the co-op as it stands now to make a pronouncement in terms of more geothermal, and if so, where. That's a decision that will certainly have to be made by the membership. So my main point, I think, would be is that we have abundant renewable energy resources on this island, and it's going to take a live operational co-op to determine what directions to take, what strategic priorities to pursue. But we are in a much better position than any other island in the chain to be able to do that. I think we can probably, with a fairly aggressive focus on the available renewable energy resources, probably get to 60, 70, 80% relatively quickly, as in the next 10 or so years. I think we're way, way ahead of 2045. But one of the key parts of the equation is you need to have firm power. Firm power means that it's 99.998% or something thereabouts that it's going to be on all the time. And of course, there are times when the wind doesn't blow and times when the sun doesn't shine. So in order to turn non-firm power, which are typical renewable energy, other than geothermal is considered firm power, you need to have battery storage that is cost-effective. And battery storage is cost-effective, could in effect, and will in effect, in my opinion, become firm power. But we're not there yet in terms of both residential cost-effective storage and utility-scale cost-effective storage. We're just starting down that path right now. But there's no doubt, I think, that storage cost will advance technologically and it will become cheaper. And we're seeing on Kauai Island with Kauai Island Utility Co-op that their third utility scale PV project, which should go operational either late this year or early next year, will have the first commercial battery storage in the country that will have so-called dispatchable power. What does that mean? It means that power is stored during the day when the sun is shining and used during peak demand hours, which is when the sun is not shining, typically between 5 to 10 p.m. And KIUC, the first in the country, working with Tesla to have a 50-plus megawatt hour battery to be able to do that. So they are pioneering what's going to become much more common in this state and much more common on the mainland as well. Utility scale renewables, cost-effective renewables with cost-effective storage equals firm power.
That's really interesting to hear, because I know when we spoke a year ago, you said that was, in fact, the issue, having battery storage. And it's nice to know that big progress is being made in that area. Now, in order to get to 100% renewable, clearly there's a cost to do that. And you mentioned with a co-op, there is the potential for lower rates, but clearly not a guarantee. Oil prices today, I think, are around half the price of oil prices 2 years ago. So I guess the question is, going to renewables is a good thing for the environment and for a lot of reasons, but what's the willingness of the public to pay more for renewables?
I don't think they should have to pay more. I think for a time, and I've been in this game now for 38 years, and here in Hawaii, pretty much 100% for the past 16 plus, and for a time, there were required incentives, both in terms of net energy metering, state and federal tax credits to essentially give renewable energy and solar a boost to be able to be attractive enough to homeowners and business owners. Well, costs have come down substantially, and it used to be, to some extent, renewable energy at all cost, and now it should be cost-effective renewable energy. And this is what we're seeing with significant decrease in cost, both in terms of solar panels, the accompanying hardware, and also battery storage. So those costs will continue to go down. I couldn't, in good conscience, or I wouldn't, I should say, go to the residents of Hawaii and ask them to pay a premium for renewable energy, because I don't think they'll even have to make that choice, because it will continue to go down in cost and it will become more and more cost effective compared to other means of power generation or other fuel sources.
Right now, the way the electric utility grid is arranged, HELCO oftentimes has to say no to people who want to put individual solar panels on their homes. In fact, a neighbor of mine just put in a request and was told the only way it would work is if they got battery storage to store it, which they are finding too expensive at this time. So is that just the way HELCO operates, or would the Hawaii Island Energy Co-op have the same challenges in managing the grid? Or can everybody expect they can put solar panels on their roof if an energy co-op takes over?
That's a really great and important question. I'll tell you why. Because everyone, and by everyone I mean the legislature, the governor, state agencies, and the utility companies, have recognized the value and the need for more rooftop solar. A little power plants on your roof, my roof, roofs all around us. And there are some hiccups right now, to say the least, as far as the grid saturation, grid penetration challenges across the HECO, MECO, and HELCO territories. So as a PV business person, I'm dealing with this rather acutely on a day-to-day basis, and your friend is dealing with it as well, so it cuts painfully both ways. Until the Hawaii Island Energy Co-op were to be given the keys to the kingdom, I can't say specifically what our policy would be, but I can observe that if you look at the Kauai Island Utility Co-op, they have no such restrictions on rooftop solar. I need to make clear that one of the vetting methods that they do is, if you want to get solar on Kauai, they take a look at what your consumption has been over time and essentially have a methodology where that equals a PV system of a certain size. And if you want to have a system that's double or triple that size, then you can still do it, but KIUC requires that there is essentially an automatic or remote controlled cutoff switch, if you will, that would allow KIUC to curtail the output of your system. Because unfortunately, the trend over the past several years has been across the state that the size of PV systems has been getting larger and larger and larger. Not because people are using more and more power, it's essentially PV companies selling bigger and bigger systems. So again, contrast what KIUC has been doing up until now, which is no restrictions on total kilowatts feeding into their system in terms of people being able to do it, versus the HECO companies, where there are specific, and we're finding now rather painful, restrictions and caps that we are dealing with.
Does really all this lend itself to having more what I would call solar farms? I don't know if that's the right term, but solar installations that you as the utility or they as a utility would put in, rather than having individual solar installations on one's roof?
I think ultimately it needs to be a balance. And what I'm referring to is that you have essentially three different categories of solar PV, photovoltaic. You have rooftop solar, where we have over 10,000, probably pushing more like 11,000 rooftop solar power plants here on this island alone. So that's the most micro that you can get, essentially, in terms of power generation by slapping modules on your very own roof. You have something known as community solar, also known as community-based renewable energy, CBRE for short, where those people living in condos and in non-single-family residences, they don't have an opportunity to put a PV panel or two on their roof because they're living in a condo. So this is seen as a way of these individuals, these families, being able to get in on the solar action by essentially, if you will, being partial owner of a PV system somewhere else. So that's community solar. And then the third category is utility scale solar, of which there are a number of plants on Kauai. There are a number of plants on Oahu, one or two on Maui, if I'm not mistaken. And in terms of utility scale solar on the Big Island, there are none. So you have different types of solar coming in at different costs, all feeding into essentially a finite electric grid. I don't have the magic formula for that because there are values and attractive points about each of the three, right? You want to empower individuals if they can afford to and want to put a system on their roof. You want to allow them to do that. You want to be able to encourage people who are living in condos to get a piece of the solar action as well. And at the same time, at least up until now, and most likely in the future, utility scale solar is typically the cheapest. So as a ratepayer and as a utility operator, you want to try to minimize costs, reduce costs, and ultimately try to reduce the price of electricity to the members. So you've got differing and competing priorities that are going to continue to be in play, not just on this island, but across the state.
We've spoken a little bit about firm power, and that's absolutely critical for utilities because utilities are expected to provide power to everybody 100% of the time. What does a Hawaii Island Energy Co-op envision in terms of being able to provide the appropriate amount of firm power, i.e., not necessarily wind, not necessarily sun? Is it what you spoke of before, just to having more battery storage to store the power till you need it? Or is there another thing that you'd put into the mix, whether it be continuing with oil or adding more geothermal? Just give us your thoughts on that, the firm power issue.
The goal is, of course, to reduce the amount of power generation that comes from combusting something.
Which would be oil.
Which would be oil. Or if the, Huhonua plant in Pepekeo is still up in the air, there's been no decision on that definitively, but that would be biomass. If Helco and Huhonua are able to come to terms, then that would be kind of a separate category. But in terms of reducing the amount of combustion taking place from imported fuels, the goal is to reduce the quantity of those fuels that come in and power the power plant up the road here in Keahole or at the Hamaku Energy Partner plant in Honokaa, amongst others.
There's one in Hilo, too.
Yes. So the idea is less and less imported fuel coming in and burning in a boiler or combustion turbine. And as you have less and less of those fuels come in, you have more and more cost-effective renewables come in. And as the cost-effective renewables, if they happen to be other than geothermal, which are non-firm power sources, then you necessarily have to have adequate storage in order to offset the firm power generation that you are retiring. Can that be done next week? No. Can it be done next month? No. Can it be done next year? No. It's going to be an incremental process over time as commercial utility-scale battery storage becomes more available. Because, again, we are right now in the early pioneering stage of that. So there will be advances in technology, reliability, and over the next 5 to 10 years, I have no doubt that the technology will be there, the costs will be there for bigger, bolder, cost-effective utility-scale storage and homeowner-sited storage that will continue the transformation of the grid that we have today into a true 21st century grid where power is flowing much more in a bidirectional fashion than ever before. Because you go back to 100 plus years to the days of Thomas Edison and the beginning of electric utilities, I mean, for over 100 years, we've had essentially this centralized power generation model where you have centralized power generation sending out power far and wide, sometimes in the case of the mainland, of course, thousands of miles, right? And we have been transitioning, we continue to transition to a bidirectional grid where you have micro power plants, 10,000 plus of them on this island, which are also feeding into the grid, not just 4 or 5 or 6 multi-megawatt power plants.
What else should we know before we say aloha, Marco Mangelsdorf?
It'd be a good idea to briefly mention something that came in the decision order from the commission. Again, this is good, the July 15th document. It was really important for these three commissioners that they didn't just say, we are dismissing the merger proposal by NextEra to buy Hawaiian Electric Industries, and these are the reasons we're dismissing it. They also wanted to give guidance. They wanted to provide a roadmap of sorts to any follow-on interested parties that if they were interested in buying HEI lock, stock, and barrel and power plant, or parties who are interested in buying pieces of Hawaiian Electric. It's a good idea to mention because it shows the priorities of this commission. And even as commissioners change, I don't expect these priorities likely to change. The five key areas that would be applicable to HIEC, or if HIEC were to have the opportunity to purchase ELCO, let me just run briefly through those. Corporate governance is important to the commission. They wanted to make clear that they're concerned about the utilities being controlled by entities outside of Hawaii. In this case, the HIEC, the Hawaii Island Energy Co-op, would be locally owned, member controlled. So there's no concern over corporate governance because the governance takes place on this very island. Second point being competition. They were acutely aware of the need for open, fair, transparent competition of power producers who are seeking to produce and provide more renewable energy to the HECO companies. So any type of bidding process for new power generation must be fair and transparent. The third point, the achievement of the state's clean energy goals. Well, that's kind of a no-brainer, but they felt the need to reiterate that. Well, we're already 50% there in terms of power generation. So achievement of the state's clean energy goals in terms of power generation on this island, I think, are well within reach, and the co-op would be committed to that. The fourth point being the mitigation of risks. You don't want to put the well-being and the stability of the ratepayers, in this case, if the co-op were to come into fruition, they would turn into 83,000 plus members. You want to minimize the risk to the membership. So the benefit of the co-op is that they would be covered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA for short, whereas investor-owned utilities are not. There would also be financial support available from multiple sources. Not least would be ratepayer benefits. They're very, very focused on any change of control and ownership. They want whoever comes on board to be focused on ratepayer benefits, both in the short term and the long term. And the co-op would be focused on more renewables, greater energy independence, lower cost of capital, therefore cheaper debt, no return on equity needed, no intrinsic schism or tension between ratepayers and shareholders. So we feel that on these 5 points that the co-op does offer a compelling model to be able to meet all five of those important criteria.
But right now, there is no Hawaii Island Energy Co-op, and you're not going to be able to talk right now about whether you're actually making a play for HELCO. So this is good information for the future, but not for the actual today, right, Marco?
Well, we are an official, under Hawaii State Law 421C, cooperative. And we have also applied to the Internal Revenue Service for official 501c12 nonprofit status. So these are the precursor steps, amongst others, to be able to get the keys to the kingdom, queendom, and off we go.
Okay. Thank you so much, Marco Mangelsdorf, for talking with us today.
It's been a pleasure, Sherry, and then some. Thank you so much for having me.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for being with us this morning. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We are sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Shops and on Ali'i Drive. I'll see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. And until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.